And so I feel like the message this morning is a little bit of a continuation, both of our service already this morning, some of the thoughts that have already been shared. But it's also a bit of a part two to the last sermon I preached, which you probably don't remember anymore because it was a pretty long time ago. I'm not sure, it was maybe 4 weeks ago. We had an influx of visitors, and I was blessed to be able to sit and listen a few Sundays. But we looked at Matthew chapter 11, dealing with doubt, when John the Baptist was restless himself. He was facing, maybe his peace was gone, or he was struggling with it, and he said, "Wait, this is the Christ. This is the one I've been pointing people forward to, and now I'm in prison. Wait, something doesn't seem right. Did I get this wrong?" And we see him wrestling through some of his doubts and his fears, and he goes to Jesus and he finds answers, or he sends his disciples to Jesus. I was listening through. You can open your Bibles to Matthew 11. We're going to go back to that chapter again. I was listening through some of the CDs this week that were there on the back table last Sunday from Christian Aid. And the one that really captivated my attention was actually Brother Dale answering a phone call. Maybe some of you listened to this too, but he was there was a young man that called in. He said he's just traveling. He loves to travel, and he's just riding for the next 4 hours, and he wondered if he could talk. And he told Dale that he's an atheist, full-blooded atheist, he said, all the way. And he just found it really fascinating that he'd have the opportunity to talk to a Christian and to a creationist. And so they talked for a while. But one of the things that gripped me the most about this young man was a very amiable conversation, but he said to Dale, he said that Dale was trying to appeal to him, like, don't you see there needs to be a greater purpose, like a greater good, like a God that created more than just existence, right? He said, no, I mean, his existence, his purpose in life is himself, to get ahead and to you know, make life comfortable for himself and to drive a nice car and to have a good retirement. That's what life's about. That's his purpose. And you wonder how that works out. When somebody comes to the end of life and that's all their purpose, does that purpose actually bring the rest, the peace, the satisfaction, the joy, the deep-seated comfort that we all seek? No, of course it doesn't. And so Dale took him to Jesus, and this atheist said, wait, he said, Christianity has brought much more negative than positive into America. And Dale said, well, what about true Christianity, like the teachings of Jesus? Don't you think if somebody actually followed, like turning your cheek, right, going the second mile, returning good for evil, don't you think that would make a difference? And he said, well, yeah, it actually would. And then he said, well, why don't you do it, right? Isn't that the call when we're faced with the reality of this would be for my good, this would be for the good of a greater purpose, then why won't I do it? And his reaction was, no, I can't. I'm a sleazy car salesman. He said, I'm out to make an extra buck, right? Who is Jesus? Dale gave us the challenge to read through Matthew and do the Matthew challenge and write down, who is Jesus? What is he all about? What does he do? How does he reveal himself in Scripture? What do the Scriptures tell us about him? We want to look at a little bit of that this morning. C.S. Lewis says, in reflection of Jesus and thinking about this atheist who said, yeah, Jesus' teachings would bring about good, but I'm certainly not going to embrace them. Can you actually do that? C.S. Lewis says that either you have to come to the conclusion that he's a bad man for claiming to be God, right? And yet, if he's not, then he's either a bad man, or he's a madman, or else he's the God-man. And we are faced with that question. Every human being is faced with what they're going to do with Jesus. Jesus calls to people, Matthew 11, verse 28, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Come unto me. Some days that feels good. That feels like, yes, that's where I'm at. And some days we may feel like, but where is that promised rest that he said he would give? Why is my life in so much turmoil? Some days it might feel like an empty promise. The days when we're experiencing difficulty. The days where we wonder where the rest is. Chapter 11 seems to somewhat stand by itself here. It seems to be kind of a continuous flow from the story of John the Baptist coming and inquiring or sending his disciples. And then if you look down through with me, then Jesus turns around when they leave and they say, and he speaks to the crowd. And from there, he calls out some of the false teaching, some of the things about him and about John that weren't true, the way people perceived them, their misconceptions. In verse 20, he begins to upbraid the cities where most of his mighty works were done, the places, the Jewish towns where he went and he healed and he wrought miracles. And he said, if I had done this in Sodom and Tyre and Sidon, it says, they would have repented long ago. Verse 23, Sodom. And then he prays to the Father. And he talks about, I think he's praying out loud for his disciples to hear, or whoever was there with him. And he again reaffirms this fact in verse 27 that the only way to know God is to know him, to come to him. And he will reveal the Father, to really know who God is, to really understand what is this greater purpose and this greater good. Why am I here? What does God want from my life? Learn to know Jesus, and Jesus will show you the Father and will show you the Father's purposes. And so then he offers his this invitation. Come. Come. We ended the last sermon, with the song, Just As I Am. Though tossed about with many a conflict and many a doubt, and yet we made that determination, but yet I'll come. Even though I don't understand it all, I'll come because there's an invitation. And so for a title this morning and for an outline, I would only give a very easy to follow outline. The title maybe is a little bit bland, but I just want to use the four verbs from these three verses. Come, take, learn, and find. It's the title this morning, and that's our outline as well. Come, take, learn, and find. And we want to dive into these few very familiar, very comforting verses, and see if we can find some inspiration, some help, some renewed purpose, vision, and I trust, true soul rest. Come. First part of the message is come. And I want to call this the invitation. We get invitations in the mail. There's weddings and baby showers and bridal showers and a variety of things. And sometimes at the bottom they have these four little words, RSVP. What does that mean? Well, sometimes I act like I don't know what it means because it goes several months and then the bride will call and say, are you coming or aren't you coming to our wedding? RSVP means please respond, right? Let us know if you're coming or if you're not. It's a French word, I believe, that RSVP stands for. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. But it means you need to come or you need to respond. And that's a terrible habit. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do better with that. I'm not advocating that at all. In fact, when you receive an invitation, you are forced to a decision, right? If I say, will you come to our place tonight? Either you're going to come or you're not going to come, right? there isn't really an alternative, is there? Either you come or you don't, right? And when Jesus says, come, if you hear those words, you need to either come or refuse the call, right? Is it that simple? Come. It's an amazing, gracious invitation that comes from the lips of the Lord Jesus himself. Let's look at a few aspects of this invitation. This invitation is timeless. Why is it timeless? Jesus said these words perhaps 2,000 years ago. And yet that they are just as much of an invitation to you sitting on these benches this morning as they were to the disciples who stood in his presence and heard him say, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden. They heard him speak those words. But you and I have them preserved for us today. It's a timeless invitation, and it's timeless because of the identity of the one who extends the invitation. God stands outside of time. This invitation is timeless because it comes from God. It comes from the lips of the divine. It comes from Jesus himself. The one who stepped down into time, came from where there was no time, as it were. I can't really understand that. But he stepped into our time. And he still identifies with us in our time, as it were. And he says, come. I'm inviting you to come. Again, this was recorded at the end of the chapter where we have John the Baptist being in jail. And I think it's fascinating. As I was studying this, I'm trying to tie this together. Why did Jesus give it? Is there a reason why he gave it in this context? I think that as we read, if we took the time to read this whole chapter, and I'm not going to for sake of time, because I really should be treating these four verbs as sermons of themselves. I actually had that fleeting thought this morning, and then I pushed it away. But we're just going to see if we can get through all of them. But you find John the Baptist, you find his disciples, you find Jesus' disciples, you find the Jews, you find the cities, all these people that are brought face to face with Jesus, and they have to answer this question, is who is Jesus, right? That was the challenge that was given to you Sunday night. Who is Jesus, and what does the book of Matthew say about it? And what is he asking of me, and what am I supposed to do with all of this? All of these people had to face it in one way or another. And Jesus gives this gracious invitation. He makes it clear. And as we move through these four verbs, we're going to find that it's not just an invitation to come, but it is entering into a contract, as it were. And it's choosing to come, to take, to learn, to find. And it becomes a lifetime of understanding who Jesus is and learning to know him. A timeless invitation. It's also timeless because it applies to the needs of the listeners. You and I this morning face not only this same desire for peace, for rest, for satisfaction as what the disciples did, but we also face the same sin and the same nature and the same, yes, our world's a little different than it was then. We now have cars and cell phones instead of, we have boats too, I guess. They had boats and nets, and it was a little different, but they still faced the pressures of sin and the pressures of life and the weight of life and the weight of conflict and misunderstandings, and these things all weighed them down too. And so the invitation is going out to people who are like you and like me, people like the disciples. The invitation is timeless because it applies to timeless needs. The Pharisees tried to answer this question for people as to what is the purpose in life and how do we follow God? How do we learn to know God? And Jesus got hard on them because it seems like they said, well, let's pile this on. Let's pile this on. And if you do this and do this and do this, then you can come to God. And Jesus calls them out for it. He says, you tie heavy burdens that are hard to bear. You lay them on people's shoulders. And but Jesus calls those people as well. And he calls them and he offers them something that everybody is looking for. And so I do believe that whatever our external framework is, that our lives are often marked. This timeless call comes to timeless needs. Our lives are marked by fear, by hidden fears, maybe we should say, things that we try to keep from people, deep-seated concerns, worries, and things that we'd just rather not have other people find out about, but they're real needs, and Jesus is calling in the midst of that. To the people who are hoping against hope that somewhere there is rest, somewhere there's relief, and somewhere there's peace, and there is this timeless invitation. It's not only timeless, but it's also personal. It's a very personal invitation. Jesus comes as the light of the world. He comes, I thought of the story in Mark 10. You know the story about blind Bartimaeus? He heard that Jesus was coming. And he was desperate. He couldn't see, but he could hear and he could figure out what was going on about him. And he said, the masters are here and I have a need. I have a need. How can I find him? How can I get in touch with his healer? And so he starts calling out for Jesus and they say, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, right? And then Jesus said, tell him to come. And they went to Bartimaeus and they said, come, the master calleth thee, right? Very personal. Here Bartimaeus heard these words. Jesus was calling his name. He was calling for him. And he said, I'm going to go. He got up and he went and he found healing. And so this word from Jesus is something that maybe even beyond what I even know. Because these are the words of Christ, they can enter right into your heart, into my heart, into the very needs, the very personal needs that I'm facing. And it's a personal invitation because it meets these heart needs that, yes, sometimes I don't even talk about out loud. The blindness, the fears, the worries. You think about how a blind man would just face a whole added weight of the world about him and how he's going to provide for himself, for his family, if he's married. Jesus came and he called his name personally and he calls your name personally this morning and he says, come. Come. And it's also a universal invitation. It's not just for you and me, but it's for the whole world. And so that puts a personal responsibility on us as well. These words of Christ, again, I think of these billboards. This man asked him, one of his first questions, asked Dale in the CD I was listening to. He says, just explain this to me. I drive across the country and in Utah, in the backwoods, I find one of your billboards. And then I'm in Kentucky, like in nowhere, and I find one of your billboards. Tell me what's going on. And so this invitation is universal. It is something that the people of God, those who are following Christ, understand. It's not just for me, but it's something that offers hope and healing for the world about me as well. What can I do about it? It's a universal invitation because sometimes people don't even hardly know their need until they're brought face to face with truth. Yes, they wrestle with this restlessness and fear, but they don't even understand. They don't understand this greater good, this greater purpose. It's a little like going to the dentist sometimes when you have, you might know you have a little bit of a tooth problem, but I remember them going down through and like tapping on your teeth to say, is it this one? Is it this one? Is it this one? Oh, yeah, you got it, right? I didn't even know it was that bad until you tapped on it. And that's what truth can be like to some people. Whether it's a billboard or whether it's you reaching out to them or leaving a tract, they say, oh. There is something more to life than what I realized. Maybe this is something I should pay attention to. and it can meet their needs as well. It's a universal invitation. Come. Come and take. Number two, take. And I'm going to call this the obligation. Take my yoke upon you. Come is the call of the gospel. Take is the call of discipleship. And it's actually an obligation. It's like a contract we enter into. When we answer the call to come, what did Jesus say to Peter in our Sunday school lesson this morning? Do you love me? Are you going to come be one of my disciples? Then I have a job for you to do, right? Feed my sheep, feed my lambs. When we get married and we make vows, one of the questions that's asked is, will you take, right? Will you take the sister by your side? Will you take the brother? Will you enter into this commitment, into this relationship, into this bond? This is something that is that's binding, a commitment, a contract. Take my yoke. I think we know what a yoke is. It can be a yoke worn on the shoulders for carrying buckets. It could be yokes that are put on beasts of burden to help distribute the weight. But also, a yoke tends to imply servitude, entering into this as a servant, right? There's work to do. I'm gonna take on this yoke. I'm going to align myself with the other animal that's in the yoke, right? We're yoked together and we have to work together. I have to yield myself to the other. Paul, writing to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:1, says, let as many servants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor. So here it is again. A yoke speaks of servitude, having a master over us. And that metaphor is one of submission. I think the problem with the religious leaders was, as we look at these verses in between, they weren't even, they weren't content to stick with the law of God as it had been given to them. They wanted to add more. They wanted to add their own ideas. And it became quite a burden to them. And what Jesus says in Matthew 5, of course he's saying here, he says, come, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I think many of them listened to Jesus' teachings, and you could go to Matthew 5, for instance, and Jesus said over and over, he said, you've heard that it's been said, but I say unto you, and he strengthens it. And it could appear like the yoke is actually becoming heavier, like he's bringing greater restrictions and greater accountability and greater things to bear upon us. Well, I think what we need to understand is the paradox of this. What is the paradox? My yoke is easy. Yoke is work, right? My yoke is easy, and my burden is what? Something that's heavy, right? But it's light, right? So he begins to open up this paradox. Psalm 119 says, 44 and 45, so shall I keep thy law continually forever and ever. I'm going to keep your law forever, but listen to the next verse. And I will walk at liberty, for I seek thy precepts. In keeping the law, there is freedom. In following Jesus and taking on his yoke, there is freedom. I want you to get that this morning. Freedom is found in the pathway of obedience. This is the biblical paradox, as it were. We're either serving a living God, submitting ourselves to him, taking on his yoke, and finding freedom, or else we're serving in our freedom that we think we have. We're committing ourselves as servants to sin, servants to self, servants to Satan. So many people view freedom as the absence of restraint. But Jesus said, take my yoke upon you. Take my yoke upon you. I hear the children come home from school talking about ultimate frisbee fairly often. Play it right out here. I want you to think about, what would ultimate frisbee be like without any rules? No goals, no teams, no rules about what you may do with the Frisbee and not running with it. And it would become what? It would just become just throwing it, right? It wouldn't be a game. A game isn't really a game without rules, right? Sometimes we get really uncomfortable with rules. Rules, right? No, we find freedom in Jesus. Listen, there's a paradox here. Biblical freedom is found under the yoke of Jesus. To be myself, I have to deny myself. To be free, I have to give up my freedom. To find myself, I have to lose myself. Jesus said it in almost those words. But he said, you can't be my disciple unless if you come, take up your cross. And if you want to live, then you have to die. The paradox. Come, take, and learn. Number three. I'm going to call this the education. Learn of me. And I'll try to wrap this up here quickly. Who is he? Again, I challenge you. Who is he? And we can't, the subject of who is Jesus is so big. He says, learn of me. How are you going to learn of Jesus? And how do you talk about learning of Jesus? Remember, John the Baptist wrestled with this himself. Who is Jesus? Are you the Messiah? Or is there one to come? The Apostle Paul, when he was Saul, he wrestled with this. When God met him on the road to Damascus, shone down that light and stopped him in his tracks, he said, who are you, Lord? Who are you? And people wrestle with this question. Who is Jesus? Who is God? After several days, it says that it was as if scales had fallen off his eyes. Suddenly his eyes were opened. He was baptized. He entered into the yoke. And then he went out and he spent, was it 3 years? Learning about Jesus. He was taken under wing by, I'm sorry, I didn't go back and read all that. I forget his name. But they helped him and they taught him. He learned of Jesus. It is important to have a knowledge of Christ. A knowledge that leads to an assent or an affirmation that yes, not only do I know who he is, but I inside of me and with my will, I give my will to follow, to be like him, and then to trust him as well. It's all part of learning to know who he is. What does he do? Look at verse 18 and 19. They blame John of having a devil. They blame Jesus of being a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of publicans and sinners. Is that who he is? Well, he was a friend of publicans and sinners, wasn't he? That was true because he was operating in the circles of those who needed his help and those who wanted his help. And he brought what they needed most, and that was forgiveness, peace, freedom, salvation. Who is he? What does he do? What is he like? He is the best teacher. He's available. He's accessible. He's reachable. He's understandable. He doesn't display impatience with slow students. He doesn't give expressions of intolerance to those who stumble. He is Jesus. And he is the one who offered that restoration for Peter after Peter had stumbled and fell. This is who Jesus is. And Jesus says, learn who I am. I want you, because when you understand who I am, you will enter into a relationship with me where you find what you're really looking for. What are you really looking for? Well, we're looking for Christ. That's really who we need to find. Yes, we say we need rest and we need freedom and we need forgiveness, and that's true, but what we really need is Jesus. Learn of me, he says. And I just think one of my concerns is in this digital age of so much noise, so many AirPods and so many podcasts and so many sermons, which are good, and some of that all has, but I'm wondering, do we have what it takes to allow silence in our lives? Times to meditate, to think about who is Jesus. Where is he in my life? What is he doing? And what does he want for me? And this invitation to come, what does it mean for me? What am I entering into? Am I learning more and more of who he is? Do I find closer and more warm fellowship as I enter in and think about and meditate on who he is? Draw near to Christ. Fellowship with him. His promise is that he'll draw nigh to us. And the fourth one, find. What are we finding? Finding rest for your souls. And I called this the ultimate transformation. Again, because this world has been marked. If you go all the way back to the beginning of Genesis, you have this beautiful picture of rest. In fact, if you look at the days of creation, you find mankind being created on day six, right? Excuse me. So their first full day was what? A day of rest. And so I think God was teaching them and teaching us already that his desire is for people to find rest. But you only have to turn a page or two and you find that serpent slithering in and he upsetting and he brings these thoughts of disbelief, right? And thoughts of rebellion and thoughts of pride and I'll do it my way. I'll be a God. I'll understand. And because of that, you end up with a world that's full of pain that doesn't just go away. There's obsessions, there's addictions, there's violence, there's a loss of meaning and purpose in life. And the good that God created can feel like it's out of our reach. Where is this call? God said, it's very good, this place I created for mankind. Well, it was an amazing design, but man and we have brought so much upon ourselves through our own rejection of God's wisdom, through our own rebellion against his authority, and through our own doubting of his goodness, just as Eve did. And that's the story throughout Scripture, and it's a little bit of a disheartening Scripture, but there's the other side of it, right? The other part of the story, and we talked about this already, is that God entered into our world. He sent Jesus into time, and he came with this invitation and this offer. And this, as it were, this natural, is that the right word? The natural result of following this way that he calls, right? It's come, take, learn, and you will find. It is a promise. It's not just something that might be yours if, well, it is yours. It is the natural result of accepting the invitation, learning who Christ is, submitting ourselves to that yoke, and we find rest. We find rest. It's a promised rest. Restlessness from our rebellion, restlessness from our fear, our worry. Well, there's much more that could be said about this rest. But I just want us to think about this offer and this opportunity. You see, as I said in the beginning, when we get an invitation, there is either we go or we don't, right? And I want you to think about it, each one here this morning. Think about this call. If you hear the word come, then you must say, what am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with it? What am I doing with it? Have I already sent in my RSVP? And so it's very personal. What will you do with Jesus? What will I do with Jesus? Will I accept this tremendous invitation and the blessings that come along with it? And the hardship, perhaps, the yoke. Yes, it's his yoke, and he'll help us, but it will be a yoke. It will require submission. It will require giving up some things that we might find hard to give up. But let's look beyond that, too. Let's view this as a daily mission. We have this opportunity to also say, come, come. This is who Jesus is. This is what he can do for you. When we hear the conversations and we enter into these conversations about politics, like we heard this morning, and the fears that people express so quickly about what's going to happen if, right? What are we doing with those? Are we taking advantage of those opportunities to say, but come, come. There's something so much more. There is something full of meaning and purpose, something that will bring you rest and restoration. Many in our world are desperate to hear this invitation. Many haven't heard it. Many need you to tell them. And there may be people in your life who won't hear it unless you tell them. Yes, God says he puts it within the heart of each person that there is a God. But he also gives us, as his ambassadors, the responsibility to also say, come. Not only to come to Jesus ourselves, but to pass on that invitation and say, there is somebody who loves you, there's somebody who cares, and there's somebody who can bring you rest and bring answer to your fears. So God bless you through this coming week. May you first of all accept that invitation. And if you lay in bed at night and you face fears and you face questions and you worry about what would happen if you die, there's a call. There's an answer. Come. Come to Jesus. Bring your burdens. Come bring your burdens to God. Find forgiveness. Find restoration. Find that deep, settled heart peace that he offers. And then go share that with others.